time to wake up. It's Saturday morning. Find some milk and cereal. Grab a bowl and spoon. No, a bigger spoon. Head to the living room and take a seat on the floor while Joseph and Chris present to you
Saturday Morning Cartoon!
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Saturday Morning Cartoon Boom. This is the show where we wake up with the Saturday morning sun, plop down the living room floor, the big bowl of sugary cereal, and show your favorite cartoons, both old and new. I'm Joseph.
And I'm Chris.
And this morning, we watched Batman Beyond.
Cue the techno music.
A lot of 90s, superhero shows went that route. But I guess this one was kind of like, because the time frame it was set in, I guess, was sort of industrial steampunk almost. Steampunk, but
it was like industrial goth techno.
Yeah, that's fair. The intro was pretty sweet, though. It was designed by Darwin Cook.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, cool. It looked really cool, too. So
thank you, Darwin Cook.
Thank you.
And this was suggested by Will Denson via Facebook. Thank you, Will.
Oh, yeah. He also commented on the post. It was like, excited to hear what you guys think about this.
He was very excited. So
I'm
glad that you were excited, because we were excited that you're excited that we were doing this and excited about it.
And I think he was hopeful that we'd be so excited about what we had just watched that he was excited about.
I'm so confused right now. What are we saying?
Anyway, the show Batman Beyond ran from 1999 to 2001, created and developed by Bruce Timm, Paul Dini, and Alan Burnett. Produced by Warner Brothers Animation, ran for 3 seasons, 52 episodes, on the Kids WB network. For a short synopsis, fueled by remorse and vengeance, a high schooler named Terry McGinnis revives the role of Batman. Under supervision of an elderly Bruce Wayne, he fights crime in a harsh, futuristic Gotham.
That's true.
So much remorse, so much vengeance.
You know, it wouldn't be a Batman show if there wasn't remorse and vengeance, because that's pretty much the epitome of the character.
That's the core of Batman.
Yes.
Batman.
Remorse and vengeance.
Parentheses. Remorse / vengeance.
Yeah.
So, Chris, who are some of the actors you played in this show?
All right. Well, the character of Terry McGinnis, our main character, was voiced by Will Friedle, who was known for playing Eric Matthews on Boy Meets World and Girl Meets World. He's also the voice for Bumblebee in several Transformers animated series and the voice of Peter Quill, a.k.a. Star-Lord, in most of the Marvel animated series.
Mr. Feeny!
Perfect.
That's Eric Matthews.
Yeah, that's Eric Matthews.
That I know. I never knew that.
Remember him, that's him.
Growing up, I never knew that. I never knew it was him.
He does a lot of cartoons.
I think this was his first voice acting role, I believe. I might be wrong.
I think you were correct, too. As I was looking at that, I think this was his first one. And
sweet.
He has lots after that. The voice of Bruce Wayne, of course, Kevin Conroy, who everybody knows from the original Batman the Animated Series, from the Arkham Knight series, and is probably the best iteration of Bruce Wayne / Batman ever. No prejudice there. The voice of Dana Tan, which is Terry's on and off girlfriend, was Laura Tom, who was the voice of Amy from the show Futurama. She also played Linda Tran from Supernatural. So for you Supernatural fans, there is a very hardcore fan base, so I know you'll be excited to hear that that was Kevin Tran's mom.
Nice.
The voice of Max was done by Cree Summer, someone who has popped up a ton of times in our podcast, which surprised me because I never knew her before we started doing this show. And now I swear she's been in at least a third of the shows that we've done. So very, very popular voice actress, Cree Summer.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
And then finally, the voice of Barbara Gordon was Stockard Channing, who is mostly known for acting in the TV series The West Wing and The Good Wife.
Sweet. So for a few tasty marshmallows here's a few tasty marshmallows out of our big bowl of Batman Beyond cereal. The WB network never allowed Bruce Wayne's age to be revealed in the series because they didn't want him to be old and decrepit. In one episode where Bruce has a birthday, the writers said his age in the initial script, but had to take it out because the WB network would not allow it. The producers say that Bruce Wayne is about 80.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
No, we saw that episode, too. That was one of the ones that we watched where they, it's his birthday.
That one was actually written by Paul Dini, and we'll get there, though. Also, one of the rules for Saturday Morning TV was to never fire a gun at the camera. However, this series managed it several times in the second season premiere. One scene was even used in a promotional clip for the episode.
I wonder how they got away with that, you know?
It's Batman.
I feel like, man, like, kids shows... Well, we know now from doing this show that kids shows are super, super, like, it's super strict for them to, like, they usually don't get away with anything. I mean, we look at anything like, you know, Real Ghostbusters and stuff, like, had so many problems doing anything that they wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of surprised that this got away with
you know, them, but. It's funny that you say that, too, because going back to the previous Marshmallow, where they wouldn't even allow them to use Bruce Wayne's real age, but it's like, it's don't use age, but it's okay to shoot a gun at the camera just this once.
That's weird.
That is weird. So, I don't know. But also, Bruce Timm was not originally happy with the original actor for the Joker's gang leader, and Alan Burnett told him that he should do the voice instead. So he reluctantly did it, Bruce Timm did, and eventually Burnett and the other writers kept writing the character into many episodes so that he would have to do voiceovers for the character.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So they're kind of like messing with him, basically.
Yeah, that's so great. It's like, okay, you're going to be this picky about this Joker leader? All right, then now you're him forever.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. The original working titles for the series was The Tomorrow Knight, Batman Tomorrow, and B2. All of those, terrible. So,
yeah, those are awful.
Batman B2. Beyond, I'm so glad that they ended up with that. They, you know what? They had made art, actually, for Batman Tomorrow and everything. Like, they were ready to launch with that title. And then I think there was just something about it at the end that they had to pull back. And I don't even think it was a preference thing. I think it was, like, something... some kind of technical thing about it that they couldn't use it. And so they went with Batman Beyond instead. So
like if they're doing any commercials, they're like, watch Batman Tomorrow. And you're like, oh, I guess it's on tomorrow.
Yeah. Watch Batman Tomorrow today.
And then you missed it because
like, what?
It was
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if that was a cause. I don't know.
That's an awful name.
Oh yeah. I'm so glad Beyond. After I read that, I really appreciated Batman Beyond. Just the
what
title
is it
alone.
Beyond, though, you know?
It's like, Beyond.
What is Beyond?
Beyond yesterday, which is, or Beyond today, which is tomorrow. So it's saying the same thing, just a little bit further.
This just makes me think of like Bed Bath and Beyond. I'm like, what's the Beyond part?
Right.
You know, like that's what I'm trying to figure out with Batman. Okay, where's this Beyond coming to play?
Right.
What have you gone beyond?
Yeah.
Beyond Bruce Wayne, I guess. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah. Beyond the original. Who knows? Yes. Also, one last thing. I mean, there's tons of things, but one last notable thing. Ace the Bat Hound. He's existed since the 50s, inspired by the popularity of Crypto the Superdog. And he's been in so many different iterations. He was originally a German Shepherd. And it wasn't until, I think, maybe this show that he was actually portrayed as a Great Dane.
Yeah.
And then also in the New 52, he was brought in as a Great Dane. And I believe in the current Rebirth, he's also a Great Dane. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, his origin has varied per different storyline. In Rebirth, currently, he used to be one of Joker's fighting hounds, and his name is Ace because he was like they were all marked like cards, a deck of cards. So
I was kind of wondering about that. You know, I knew that a dog existed that was supposed to be like a bat dog, just the same as there was Crypto the Superdog.
Yep.
You know, I might be wrong. I think there's a cartoon of those two, but I might be wrong.
There's a cartoon or a comic called Super Pets. I know that exists in some form. So you're right, but I don't know which one is right.
We'll figure this out.
Yeah.
But so I knew of that it existed, but until you said that, I didn't realize that this Ace was supposed to be that dog, which is cool. That's cool that they snuck him in, but they didn't like, you know, put the cape on him and make him really stupid. Like they made it like a viable, like this is a guard dog for Bruce Wayne because he can't necessarily take care of himself like he used to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like that. That's cool.
Yeah, that's a total Paul Dini move, though, to bring something in from the past and make it relevant to the present. So, Chris, do you have any memories of this show? I'm sure you do.
Oh, definitely. I was huge into Batman the Animated Series. So, of course, when this came out, I definitely was all over it. Didn't like it as much as a kid. Didn't like it nearly as much as the Animated Series because, to me, Bruce Wayne is always Batman. I had a lot of trouble getting into this one as a kid because I did not like Terry McGinnis. I thought some of the future stuff was kind of cheesy, and I still kind of think that in a way, but I'll explain that a little bit better later. I watched it, but I didn't watch it nearly as much as I watched other Batman cartoons.
My feelings are almost parallel to yours because it was like, I knew it existed, of course, because it was on as we were growing up, but I wasn't a big fan of it because, like, I was such a big fan of the animated series. It was weird to me that they were trying to change Batman. That was like, it, at least at that point in my life, any different iteration of Spider-Man, like, I couldn't accept because that was, I had one Spider-Man and that was it. Right. And so in the same way for Batman, I didn't give this one a good enough chance in the past. And because I don't know how old we were. I guess we would have been like 14 or 15 or something.
We would have been like, so this started in 99.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we would have been like 13 going through 15 or something like that.
Yeah, so I think we were even like the target demographic, but because we had come in on Batman the Animated Series, it was hard for us to move over at that time. That said, though, I think that I kind of feel bad I didn't give this a good enough chance after rewatching some of these episodes.
Yeah, I agree.
So let's go ahead and jump into three episodes we watched for today's show. Very first episode, highest rated episode, finally, random listener chosen episode. Or it may vary depending on how these episodes fall chronologically, but of course, we have to start with the very first episode being, well, first two episodes, Rebirth, season one, episode one and two. Over 50 years into the future, a young Terry McGinnis meets the aged and reclusive Bruce Wayne, even as the boy's father discovers a foul secret of his corrupt employees. I'm not going to read all that because that gives so much away right then. Right. Yeah, so we're 50 years into the future right now. We get to see, actually, first we get to see Batman's last run as, or Bruce Wayne's last run as Batman. And it makes it make sense, like, why he stopped at this point.
Yeah, I like it too, because we get to see how, you know, he goes in basically like he always would, trying to save this woman that was kidnapped, but he's a little slower. It looks like he's getting chest pains while he's going. I don't know that it's necessarily a heart attack, but definitely chest pains that's slowing him down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's getting beat up by thugs and stuff like that. He gets to the point where he, and for those who are hardcore Batman fans, you know how dire a situation this is, that he at one point has to grab a gun and point it at the guy because, you know, that's his last thing. He's gonna die.
Yeah.
And they're gonna get away and the starlet is going to die or, you know, remain kidnapped and stuff like that, that he's trying to save. So he pulls out the gun and aims it at the guy. And yeah, man, I don't remember that as a kid in like the impact of it. This was way more serious than I expected right off the bat. Like his hands shaking as he has it. The bad guy runs and he's kind of realizing that he can't do what he used to do anymore. And the next logical step, which was using the gun, is gone too far.
Yeah.
So he's like, basically, I can't do this, so it can't be done anymore.
Yeah, seeing as how his parents were killed in that manner, and that was one of the things he solemnly, like, it was one of his hard and fast rules of Batman in general is, like, I don't use guns, like, period. And
so ignore Batman v Superman.
Ignore that, especially in relation to this. Because this is he has to use the gun in order to not get beaten to death by a crowbar, basically. And in the same sense, also save that woman who he's trying to save. So he does it for a good reason and he doesn't fire the gun, but just threatening the criminal with it alone was enough for him to decide to basically throw in the towel and take off the cowl because I think he even says, like, never again.
Yeah, he puts the suit away and he shuts down everything in the Batcave. You know,
that was a really powerful scene, too. Down.
Yeah,
because you get to it's kind of like you're seeing flashes of his career, basically, as Batman, as he's shutting these lights off. You see all those trophies that you're familiar with, like the giant T-Rex, the big penny, the Scarface is even there, you know, the ventriloquist dummy. So it's emotional in a sense. It opens in an emotional fashion by seeing Batman retire, even though you know that it's going to be a new Batman. Oh, by the way, he's also wearing the suit that you're familiar with in Batman Beyond, that black suit with the red bat on it, and the more futuristic technological Batman suit, I guess.
And I always wondered why the red bat symbol, like why they went that route, like why the change there. Like, I get with Terry McGinnis, him being a new Batman, it makes sense to make it a little different and stuff like that, but I wasn't sure why Bruce Wayne would like make something that sleek for himself. Like, well, that seemed kind of weird.
Yeah, it harkens back, and this is just speculation, but it harkens back a little bit to the Batman 66 Batmobile, where it's like the black Batmobile with the red bat on the side of it.
Could be taking
a little from that. I'm not sure. That's just me guessing.
You know, though, that's a really good point.
But also, I think maybe red and black are just kind of more fearsome colors, even though it doesn't hide him as well in the shadows. It's like maybe he's just trying to be more intimidating. This suit also gives him enhanced powers. I think it's 10 times normal strength and various other abilities. In his case, it was to compensate for his lack of, or for his body kind of, you know, aging and losing those abilities that he naturally had. So it wasn't that he was trying to enhance his normal strength. It was to just to keep up with his age.
Because unfortunately, we don't last forever.
No, not even Batman. Well, and Batman's
maybe
the perfect
Superman,
man.
But yeah. Yeah.
Well, true.
And then we get to see that 20 years progress with no Batman. And we're introduced to, you know, the society. It's very futuristic. There's like hover cars and crazy light rail trains everywhere, and everything's automated. And we could see Terry McGinnis on this, basically on this light rail heading to school or something. And this guy gets on this train looking like, kind of dressed like Harley Quinn. And he is what's called a Joker, which is kind of like become this punk like thug subculture, basically, of criminals that dress like Harlequins and like the Joker and things like that. They kind of look at him as like a it's almost like organized anarchists, basically, that are around to cause trouble and just mess with people and be criminals and steal and stuff. So this guy tries to rob this woman of her purse, and Terry gets in a fight with him. Terry fights a lot. He's constantly getting into fights, especially in this episode.
Yeah, he's a troubled child.
So basically, he beats him up and everything. And then it's kind of like after the fact, it looks like the police kind of show up, and it's just like, yeah, thanks for nothing.
He gets in a fight with this guy to protect that woman. He gets in trouble. We get to see Terry's dad at this point, right? It jumps over to this scene where his friend comes in, or his friend calls him, and he's like, hey, I need to meet you somewhere. I need to give you something or something like that. And his friend slips him like a small compact disc that contains information that's, you know, likely very private. We don't know at this point what it is, but he's basically like, here, hold this. And then during that meeting, his friend gets taken by these people that we don't know who they are as of yet. Basically, these thugs, these goons.
Yeah, they work for, well, at least we think we know who they work for. It is kind of introduced that there is this mogul, if you will, named Powers, who I guess he's kind of taking control of Wayne Enterprises. And
yeah, I think there's a partnership between his company and the, you know, Wayne Enterprises.
Right.
Because it's Derek Powers is the head of the other one. And I guess maybe he had some sort of benevolence, or Bruce thought that he could be trusted, but now he's clearly gone the opposite direction, and so he's got this Mr. Fix, I think is his bodyguard, who's working with him, which is like, he's a guy with he's a big bulky guy with a scar on his face,
and he's actually voiced by George Takei.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Mr. Fix's, or
yeah.
Oh wow, I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Right. His dad like gets this disc from his friend, and he kind of goes home and he's checking this stuff out, and he's seeing, like, we don't exactly know what he's seeing, but he's just like, I can't believe, like, Powers is insane if this is what he's doing kind of thing. So obviously it's kind of like some sort of corporate espionage might not be the word for it, but like basically this guy was a whistleblower and he got it to Terry's dad, and Terry's dad sees it and he's just like basically having this revelation that, you know, something really bad is going on.
And at that time, that's when Terry walks in and he walks in the room and says he's going out, but he's like, well, you're grounded because you got in this fight basically. And then something about like, he can't control his temper and that's something he needs to work on. And then he's upset that he has to still live with his dad. He'd rather be living with his mom. So basic like family drama going on. And right. Then he kind of ungrounds himself, quote unquote, and just leaves. Like he's just fed up with his dad and just leaves. Without saying too much already, I guess this is a really strong focal point right here in his life, a big change in his life.
And he says some mean stuff to his dad and basically mocks him, like saying, oh, you're such a success. And, yeah, you know, things like that, and walks out, and he goes to club because teenagers go to clubs, I guess. And meets up with his girlfriend and some people, and some jokers show up and start causing a ruckus. And one of them grabs Dana and riding the motorcycle around, taking off with her. So Terry gets angry, of course, because he's a hothead, and
yeah.
Decides to pick a fight again and knocks some of the jokers around.
What this escalates into though is so Terry defends Dana, and what it escalates into is almost an Akira like motorcycle chase through Gotham that leads us to Wayne Manor, and Bruce just happens to be standing outside, and Terry has to screech to a halt and stop there. And then he's confronted
by crashes.
Oh yeah, I guess he does crash. Yeah,
and he almost hits Bruce.
Yeah, and then he's confronted by all of these the Joker gang that had followed him in a very road rash like manner with chains and stuff on motorcycles. At this point, like, you know, Bruce can still hold his own to an extent. He's still a trained fighter. His body just can't keep up with his abilities, I guess. So he and Terry both are fighting off this Joker gang, not having any problems. But then after the fight's over, Bruce nearly collapses, or he does collapse, kind of.
Yeah.
And Terry has to kind of shoulder him over to Wayne Manor to get his heart medicine.
Yeah, I like when they're getting up there and the dog's like growling at them. So he gets Bruce's meds, and then he sits him down in this chair, and Bruce falls asleep pretty much immediately. I mean, snoring, like, it's like, it's really funny because Bruce Wayne is just completely turned into that grandpa that just immediately falls asleep and is snoring in a chair.
Yeah.
And he's getting ready to leave, but he hears a noise and he sees a bat stuck inside this grandfather clock. So he's like, oh, that's weird. So he's trying to get him out and he's trying to open it, and he ends up opening the clock. The clock, you know, moves out of the way, and he sees an entrance, and he discovered the entrance to the bat cave. So, you know, walks down there, and Bruce ends up catching him down there and smacks him with a cane, knocks him out.
Yeah, basically like, get out of here and never come back, stuff right. like that.
And he just basically goes home from there, and things ensue.
I like the way they played this off, because he comes home to an ambulance or multiple ambulances and police cars at his house, and there's like Joker tag stuff all over the lawn and the yeah. house. And so he's led to believe that the Jokers, and in his mind, it's because they're out for revenge based on what just happened at this encounter. And so he's just like, you know, how do they trace me back to my house? But what ended up happening, and his mom's there too, but what ended up happening is his dad was killed by, at this point, he thinks the Jokers, but we know better.
Right. So his mom is there because he lives with his dad. His mom's still alive, but they're divorced, and he was just living with his dad, and while his little brother's with his mom, and his mom's there, and he's like, what's going on? And she can't even tell him because she's just can't get the words out, and finds out, his dad's dead.
And he's
super upset with himself for the things that he said to his dad and how he treated his dad. And
yeah, because the last interaction they had was this fight, and that's got to be like the worst feeling to leave on terms like that.
So then he calls his girlfriend, has her taken back to Wayne Manor, and he's basically kind of demanding to be let inside. And
Well, because he has the disc now, Bruce does, or he's able to, or no, he wants to talk to Bruce about what he found on the disc, because he saw that before he left his house, he was looking at the disc that his dad left behind in a picture frame as he was going through some of his dad's old stuff. And so with that disc, he finds out that Powers was creating some nerve gas that could be used during battles, during wars that foreign countries would find interest in. And so there's a lot going on with that. And so he's trying to go to Bruce and be like, hey, this guy you're working with, like he's making these things and he needs to be stopped. Like Batman needs to stop him. And he's like, I don't do that anymore. Go give it to Commissioner Barbara Gordon and just leave me alone, basically. Is it as he's leaving, Powers tries to intercept Terry and he has to give up the disc, I think. And that's when he goes back to Wayne Manor after Bruce is asleep. It looks like he ties Ace up to the fence with a rope. And then he goes to Wayne Manor and he steals the bat suit, which I guess is, since it's a futuristic bat suit, it can automatically fit against whoever is wearing it, because Bruce is obviously much larger than this guy, but it fits on him perfectly. So he goes and gets that and he goes to essentially fight Mr. Fix and Powers to stop this deal from happening and to get revenge for his father, because he finds out that, of course, it was them who had done this. I think he actually hears Mr. Fix say it when he's listening in, because this bat suit has like kind of some listening gear on the fingers. If you put it up against a wall or a door or something, you can hear what's going on inside.
Within this suit, it's almost all like computer, like underneath the skin of the suit. So it's got like tons and tons of stuff built into it. So Batman doesn't necessarily have to rely on just like what he's got in his utility belt, because the suit itself does a lot.
Right. I don't like, there's no utility belt on this. It's all kind of built in. So it's a lot more streamlined and sleek.
Which is really cool. Like, I do like that part about the suit.
I don't know how I feel about still the mouth on the suit. I'm not sure why that was necessary.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's kind of weird, but
I accept it, but I just don't know if it's needed.
Yeah, like I guess it could have been just kind of like covered or something like that. But I don't know, for whatever reason, I guess they wanted you to be able to see his mouth when he talks. Like, how would that work in real life? Like that part around the mouth would have to be real super flexible and have to be like, I don't know, like glued to your lips or something. For it to not, like, you know, your mouth not to slip through it or something.
So. Right. Right. I would think it just wouldn't be practical, would be my main thing against it. But I don't know.
Right.
I'm nitpicking against that, really.
Yeah, exactly.
Otherwise, I like the suit. Yeah.
It is a cool suit.
So he goes to fight. Powers is having a meeting with a Russian ambassador. I think he's Russian ambassador, who is interested in the nerve gas, obviously, for wartime efforts. And because he shows them pictures of what it does to a person, and it's like really quickly, like we don't even get to see the pictures after a certain point, because I'm pretty sure it's fairly gruesome based on his reaction to those pictures.
Right.
It kind of just eats. It's like a bacteria almost. It just eats away at your body at a very quick rate. And the only way to cure it is like high amounts of radiation or high heat or something to that effect.
Yeah, and then we know that the guy that actually got this disc originally to Terry's dad was actually exposed to it, because he had the symptoms, like,
yes,
showing up on, like, his arm and his neck. And,
like, some black splotches. Like, while he's fighting, Bruce finds out that the suit was stolen, so he starts communicating with him, because there's an intercom within the suit that he can talk to through the back computer back at Wayne Manor. And so he's talking to him and telling him, like, to bring it back now, like, he doesn't care what he's doing. And, he's basically like, I'm a little busy. I'm trying to stop this thing. And what Bruce does is there's a failsafe on the suit, because Bruce always has a failsafe for just about everything he does or makes. So
yeah, otherwise he wouldn't be Bruce Wayne.
Exactly. And so he paralyzes Terry by shutting the suit off so that he can't move anymore. But it happens to be in a critical moment where he's being basically beaten to death by the whole crew. You know, it's the point where it's like, you know, finish him off. And so the guy's holding a gun to his face, and Bruce has to sit there for a second and just really contemplate, like, it kind of comes to him that, like, I don't want this kid to die because of this, even though I'm mad or whatever. So he releases him from the paralyzation of the suit and lets him go on fighting. And he's able to stop this eventually hovercraft that has a nerve toxin, that's carrying the nerve toxin on it. In fighting Powers, Powers ends up inhaling some of the nerve gas, so he's infected, and then he fights with Mr. Fix, who I'm assuming, I don't know if he comes back at all, but I'm assuming he dies here because he goes down into the water with the ship and it doesn't look like it's coming back up at all. So
yeah, I don't know. I honestly wouldn't be surprised though if he does show up again at some point in the series, because these villains always tend to kind of do that. Like,
that's true. The way I could see
him coming back like different with some sort of powers he got from that ship going down or something
that had the nerve toxin in it, right?
Like he probably comes back as like some sort of monster that can like release the nerve toxin himself, like from his own body. Or,
well, I mean, we do see that in a way happens to Powers, as we see him at the end of the episode where, well, if something else happens first, I'm going to go to this part first because it transitions off what we're talking about. Because, you know, Powers, we see him, you know, he's getting that high radiation treatment to cure this nerve toxin. And they're like, good news is it's cured. And he's like, what's the bad news? And he looks at himself in the mirror and the radiation is so high that it's kind of taken over his whole body. So he has this greenish glow to him. He's essentially emitting radiation from him now. He is one with radiation. So I'm pretty sure he's a villain that comes back in future episodes. None of the ones that we watched, but I'm sure he's one of the big baddies since he starts out on this first episode. But before that happens, we get to see that Bruce Wayne goes over to Terry's house, much to his surprise, and he's talking to his mom and sitting on the couch having tea or something. And he's basically like, you know, I want to offer you a job as my personal assistant. And, you know, since Bruce is older now, he could use somebody to help him out. And Terry needs a job. So in a way, it makes sense to his mom. And so she's like, you should definitely take it. Like, he's rich and whatnot. So,
yeah, right. Exactly.
He's one of the most famous people in Gotham and et cetera, et cetera. And so he's like kind of telling him in a coded way that he's the new Batman by saying like, you know, I'm not going to go easy on you. I'm going to be a difficult taskmaster, et cetera, et cetera. But this is the point that we get to see Terry become the Batman, the new Batman, the Batman beyond.
If you think about it, I mean, Bruce kind of excels at, you know, mentoring young people and becoming superheroes akin to Batman. Because, I mean, look at all the Robins he's had. Let's just forget about the Jason Todd part, because that didn't work out so well for him. But he did eventually come back.
That's true.
Just a little different. But but for the most part, he's got a good track record. Yeah. They usually don't end up liking him very much in the end, but they become superheroes because of him. So yeah, it's a good option.
True. And so, yeah, instead of being the next Robin, he is now the next Batman, which at this point was a first for Bruce. So big step and good start to the series. So that brings us to the second episode we watched for today's show, which was Revenant season 2, episode 11. And this one was chosen by Will because I think in his comment, he had said that he wanted to show an episode where it kind of showed the balance between his social life and his life as Batman. And this is a strong episode that presents that. After a series of unexplainable events, all the kids in Terry's class think that the ghost of a dead student is haunting their high school. But Batman soon discovers the real cause. Dun, dun, dun.
A nerd.
A nerd. Yeah. Pretty much.
A former nerd.
A beefy nerd.
A beefy nerd. He is now.
Yeah.
You know, this episode, like Will was saying about how this shows the balance between his social life and, you know, his life as being Batman, this reminded me a lot of Spider-Man, you know, because there's a lot taking place at his school. And, you know, Spider-Man was notorious for showing up at his school to help. And, you know, I guess any teenage superhero, that tends to happen. I mean, it happens with Miss Marvel a lot in the current comics and things like that. So
and they always have to have that. That bully, I think Nelson was his name in this
one. There's always the one bully. Yeah, a Nelson or a Flash Thompson or somebody like that. Yeah, there's always one.
Right, and this is no exception. We've got, so the kids think, because there's all these strange going-ons at school, like I think at the opening of the episode, we get to see these trophies that are stuck to the ceiling for some reason, and so nobody knows what's happening. First assumption is it's haunted by Garrison Jacobs' ghost, who I forgot how they said he died.
I want to say it was like a, I don't know, maybe a car accident or something, but he was a student there that died, I guess, in the last couple of years or something.
Right.
And so the girls, like Dana, and you know what? Dana was being kind of crappy to Terry here, so I'm guessing they must have broken up by this point or recently or something, because they weren't around each other that much, and she was really just, you know, kind of off-putting towards them, you know, just not really making fun of them, but really short with him.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing that they had split up.
The girls are all kind of going gaga over this ghost.
Yeah, they're fawning over this guy.
This handsome ghost.
They look up a photo of him. They're like, oh, man, he's so handsome. And find out that he was, like, in a band and all kinds of stuff.
So the obvious thing to do is hold a seance with a Ouija right. board to bring this handsome ghost back.
It doesn't go the way they thought. Well, of course, like, Nelson at one time walks in and, like, kicks the seance board.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, something like tries to ask one of them out, and then they point to no on the Ouija board. So he kicks it, and then all of a sudden it comes flying back and hits him. And then all of a sudden all the bleacher chairs are flying everywhere. And, you know, they say that it was targeting Nelson, but like Dana herself almost got hit a few times too. It was this time because Terry was kind of, I think, annoyed about all the attention this was getting. And he's like, I want to see what this is about. So he's kind of eavesdropping as Batman, watching what's going on, sees this. And so he jumps in and pulls Dana out of the way just in time before, like, she got smashed by this chair flying through the air.
Yeah.
And the girls get out, but then he's got to save Nelson because everything is going after him at this point.
And yeah, and we still don't have any explanation for it at this point either. There's just, and at a certain point, I think one of the back of the bleachers is kind of pushing everybody up against a wall. And so he ends up rolling Nelson inside of like some, I guess floor mats.
Yeah, it's kind of like wrestling mat sort of material where it's like that somewhat thick mat, and it's a shorter version. So he wraps him up, throws him through the window. It drops about a story.
You know, I don't know if that would actually help anything at all if you were wrapped in that stuff and was thrown out a window.
In all you would probably still die.
Or at least get a pretty bad concussion.
You'd be severely injured, yeah.
So
one thing that was interesting here is you hear Terry, he makes kind of crack remarks. The best I can describe the way he talks when he's Batman is a mix between Peter Parker and Dean Winchester from Supernatural. Like, he's got kind of that dry sarcasm to him, but he's still kind of goofy. He just says in that really dry way.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And so he jumps out the window also. He goes back to Bruce and he's basically like, you know, I don't know what this is. And Bruce is doubting that it's a ghost. And he's like, well, you don't believe in ghosts? And he's like, well, I'm not saying that because I've seen, you know, zombies, like demons. Like, Bruce has seen a lot of things in his life, so he's not saying he doesn't believe in it. It just seems very high school, he says. Like, it doesn't seem like a serious threat. Oh, it goes to a scene with Terry and his family where his little brother is saying, like, oh, you know, we need to have a seance to bring Dad back and to bring Dad's ghost back. And this is kind of emotional where he's...
Yeah, it was sad, man.
Yeah, where the mom's just kind of breaking it down to him, like, no, like, Dad's gone and he's not ever coming back, not even as a ghost. And it's like, man,
they get,
Mom.
Like, really quiet, and they're just kind of sitting there like, oh. Like, there's a really awkward pause there.
Yeah.
When he says it. And like, it was kind of realistic in that way, because, like, you're like, oh, God, like, what do you say to this little kid?
Yeah,
you
and because the kid's like, I'm forgetting what he even looks like. And that's a really sad but true kind of statement to someone who's passed away. Like, they start to slip out of your mind, not because you want them to, but just because so much time is passing.
And it was nice to have something like that that's relatable and grounded in the show, because like, I gotta say, it's hard to do believable future like shows sometimes, especially with cartoons. And this one like kind of grated on me a little bit in that sense, because they would come up with their own lingo and some of it's really stupid, like shway.
Shway.
That was like their word for cool. Like, man, that was shway. And I'm like, that's, oh, it's so dumb. Yeah. And like you get like a mix of these really futuristic like flying cars and, you know, things like that. But then they're still using like CDs, you know.
Right.
So like I'm like, man, that kind of stuff kind of takes me out of it. So having a scene like this where it's something you can relate to on an emotional level when you can't really relate to the environment was nice. So kudos for that.
It helps to have those moments that ground you no matter what kind of show it is.
Right.
And we see it goes to the girls' locker room, which is being harassed by this ghost also. And there's like, I think in the mirror, there's written like in a fingerprint or something like, I still love you.
Love you. And that was aimed towards the girl aptly named Blade.
I can't remember her real name. It was like Blanche or something, but her nickname was Blade.
That's all they call her is Blade. And I'm like, come on, man.
Well, it's hip high school stuff. Futuristic.
No. You know, it is funny though how there's a girl named Max, there's a girl named Blade, but the new Batman, his name is Terry. Which is like a really, like, you know, that's like my dad's name.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm like, that's just, that was always weird to me. Like, that doesn't sound like a name that's going to be around in that point in the future, you know?
Well, his girlfriend's name is Dana, so.
Yeah, I don't know, man. The Terry just seemed weird to me. I never liked that.
But, at least it wasn't like Gordon or something. Oh, I guess Gordon. Barbara Gordon's still there.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's different. That's a last name.
That is
anyway.
True. That's okay.
So they end up, after doing some, I guess, some tying things together of like who has something against Nelson, who has a crush or whatever on Blade.
And who has something against the coach, too.
Right, who has something against the coach. And they tie it all back to this one nerdy guy who had gotten put away for something that I'm sure happened in a previous episode that we did not see. This guy, Willie Watt, who is not a ghost, and he is in juvenile hall, and their juvenile hall is like a low security prison, is what it looks like.
And the guards are really nice.
Yeah, the guards are very nice.
Especially to, like, you know, Willie, like, he was nice, which I thought was strange.
He's like, but sorry, whatever. No visitors today. And so this guy, yeah, he never gets any visitors or anything. And so Terry goes to visit him, and he's kind of trying to figure out, like, how he's doing what he's doing. Like, there, I guess what had happened before had somehow given him psychokinetic powers and for basically given him the power to move things with his mind or do things with his mind, I guess from long distances, because I'm assuming he's still in this prison when he's doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
So that part was like, I don't know how this is working, because usually when you are psychokinetic or when you see things like that, it's like it has to be at least in sight or something nearby you. So
he must be very powerful, and it must be like Charles Xavier power, where maybe he can see what other people are seeing, you know, like maybe he can go into the mind of Nelson, see where Nelson is, see what Nelson's seeing, and manipulate the objects around him.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
my only thought.
I see, because I don't know that he has any telepathy, but he does have telekinesis in a, I mean, they call it psychokinetic, but maybe that's different. Maybe that's the thing. It's psychokinetic is different than telekinesis in that way.
Yeah, I have no idea.
But he's able to do this from his cell, and, you know, Terry kind of gets him to fess up, and then this big group of guards comes in, and he's like, oh, I forgot there was a camera there.
I like how he did it, because Terry tricked him. Which gives you a little bit of like, okay, this is why Terry can be Batman, because he's actually doing some of the detective work where he's like talking to him about it, questioning him, saying, you know, this is all pretty convenient. And he's asking him about what happened to him, like at this pier, where from just having read a few things, it sounds like he had some sort of showdown with Batman. It's something to do with something called the Golem, and whatever it happened gave him these powers. Terry throws like a cup of water, throws something at him, and Willie stops it in midair. And then he's like, oh, I guess you caught me. And he's just kind of like, so where does this leave us? And that's when the police all the guards and stuff bust in, and they try to like tie him down and stuff. And he looks over at the security camera because Terry is like, well, I'm not going to tell anybody. And he wasn't lying. He wasn't going to say anything because he knew that he was being watched by a camera.
Yeah.
So as long as he got to perform it, they would know. And I think those guards were like, he must have said something to the guards to, like, you know, watch or something, because...
Yeah, keep an eye on it.
Yeah, because they came running in as soon as it happened. So... That was very clever.
It was. And so he breaks out. And to make a long story short here, he, at this point, Willie goes to the school to kind of get his ultimate revenge and get what he wants. He picks up Blade at one point with his powers and tries to kiss her. And I think he's distracted at that point like that. Or no, Cherry's trying to tranquilize him with something.
Yeah. Yeah. Bruce gave him like this tranquilizer gun. So he is waiting for him to be distracted. So when he goes to kiss Blade, Terry in the bat suit jumps and tries to do it, but Willie's too clever and knows it's coming and stops and then destroys the trank gun completely.
Yeah.
So that it can't be used.
And eventually what ends up happening is he like kind of just has a burst of power trying to stop Terry or kill Terry. Kill Batman, because he's not Terry at this point, he's Batman. But in doing so, like, he makes this really powerful whirlwind around him, and it picks up pretty much everything that's going on, and it happens to bring up this tree, and it's like he knocks himself out with that tree.
Right.
Yeah.
I was totally thinking, I'm like, man, if I were a supervillain and I did something like that, that would be me. I would be the idiot that, like, has all this power but accidentally knocks myself out like an idiot.
Yeah.
Like, that would definitely happen to me.
So he knocked himself out with the tree, and then he's put back into a holding cell. It's probably something more higher priority or something, but yeah. He's got this helmet put on him and these cuffs put on him so that he can't use his powers anymore.
Right.
And, yeah. He's still held inside whatever containment, and most likely a prison at this point instead of a juvenile hall. We get kind of a sweet thing at the end where Terry is talking to his brother Max about remembering Dad, and he's basically like, as long as you keep him alive in your brain and in your heart, and that's all that matters. Like, you don't need to see him again or his ghost or anything like that. Just, or remember exactly what he looks like. Just keep him alive in your brain and your heart. And that's kind of a sweet send off to that.
Yeah. You know, I want to say, like, that scene at the school where they're having the fight reminded me so much of that scene from the end of Chronicle, the movie, where they're having the big fight scene right at the school.
Mm.
And, like, spoilers for a movie that came out, like, 10 years ago. like, it ends because the one guy sends the flagpole and, like, impales the antagonist with it.
Right.
And that almost even happens in this, and like in reverse, like at one point Willie like grabs the flagpole and tries to impale Terry with it. And there's just a lot of stuff from that scene that reminded me of Chronicle, where I'm like, okay, the guy that wrote Chronicle, like, he had to have seen this episode of Batman Beyond because it's so similar.
Yeah, he, like, must have been a fan.
But I thought that was cool though, that I could see this in other media that I've seen. So awesome.
Yeah, it was a good episode. So thanks for the pick, Will.
Yeah.
So for the third episode we watched for today's show, Out of the Past, Season 3, Episode 4, which was the highest rated episode, where Bruce Wayne's former love, Talia, returns to offer him the chance to be eternally young. However,
that's true.
Bruce and Terry discover a dark secret. Also true.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. Another dun, dun, dun. Yeah.
Dun,
so,
dun, dun.
And this episode, like I said, was written by Paul Dini. And you can see that almost right away with how it opens, where it's a... You're seeing it open in the same way that a Batman animated series scene would go, where it's like, I am vengeance, I am the knight, and then all that. And then it turns into, you see it turn into this play, and it's a classic Batman play going on where they're singing and dancing, and Terry has brought Bruce there for his birthday, and Bruce, of course, hates it, but Terry's really into it.
I loved it. I was like, yes, a Batman musical. It's so good.
Yes.
And like the singing, the lyrics were really funny. He had taken Bruce there because it's Bruce's birthday.
Terry's like, oh, but it's so sway. And he's like, it's swarbage.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, Bruce Wayne, please don't use their lingo. So the part that I really like is Bruce leaves. He goes back to the Batcave and he's on the computer and he starts looking at his past lady loves. And he sees a picture of Zatanna, picture of Lois Lane, picture of Selina Kyle, and then Barbara Gordon. couple of pictures of Barbara Gordon. And this, I appreciate a lot for a fact that doesn't really have to do with this show. I appreciate this for the Killing Joke movie that came out that we did a previous episode on, and a lot of people were very upset that something between Batman and Barbara Gordon took place. And they're just like, no, that would never happen. But even all the way back in this show, you know, they said, yeah, like there was something there between the two of them. They just never got to act on it. But we see in the Killing Joke, if this was part of that universe, which it technically is not, they're saying, yeah, something did happen. So that could even fit into this universe, like, easily, because it's very obvious that he loved her. And in walks Talia behind him and was just like, you really loved her, didn't you? And then kind of makes a little quip about not having a photo of her up there. And I was just like, Talia, what? Like, she's here? And she looks super young, which I guess makes sense since her dad had the Lazarus Pit, but still.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I love that nod to the whole Barbara Gordon thing. That was cool.
That was cool. So. But also in the sense that, in the same way that you were talking about earlier, something that grounds the show, like a show that can be sometimes over the top since it's a futuristic type show.
Right.
It's another moment that feels very human, because we all go through moments like that, and not even necessarily always with women who we've been with in the past or anything like that, but just memories that we are flipping through photo albums or looking at old pictures and just kind of reliving those moments visually. And that is a very relatable thing. And especially for someone of his age, that's something where he can look back and be like, I miss this life. Like, I had a really good life, and or I've had a
with
really
lots
good life
of girls.
With lots of women. Lots of very beautiful women.
Yeah. All of them beautiful.
Yeah. Yes. And so in that way, it's very relatable. And so another one of those grounding moments. But what he's offered then by Talia, and this is something where it's a really opportune moment to do this. She's like, let me take you to the Lazarus Pit. Like, my father is dead. We've made the Lazarus Pit safer. We're fighting for good now. Like, I'm trying to improve the, what is it? What is that group called?
I don't remember, but she's basically using what was her father's money. I don't know. It seems like she's using it for charities and for organizations, like health organizations and stuff like that, to try to improve like life and health and things like that. So she seems on the up and up, basically. What I like too is that Terry shows up while she's down there. She showed up because it was Bruce's birthday, and she brought him some food. Like, she, like, I think it was like a roast pheasant and some stuff like that, which was a meal that they had had together at some point in the past and really loved. And she was kind of, I think, trying to remind him of, hey, you know, we used to be in love. Remember that. And then here's this offer. This is the best thing I can give you. And you can join me and we can be together again, sort of thing.
Right. And you can be your optimal age again. And at this moment specifically, that's something that Bruce is really pining for. And, it was the League of Assassins is what I was thinking. So
yes.
So it's like, it's like charities being donated to by the League of Assassins, which is kind of funny.
It is funny. And Terry shows up at this moment and is kind of like, oh, there's a person here. And then Bruce introduces them and she says something, but then Terry basically just gives off this fount of knowledge about her. He knows everything about her. You know, I really like Terry's attitude about this whole thing, because he's kind of not really trying to swing Bruce either way. You know, he's just like, whatever, this is Bruce's life. He can do what he wants, sort of thing. You know, part of him might be worried that Bruce is going to take over Batman again. And Terry isn't really sharing that that's his worry, but Talia calls him on it. But Talia says, I'll be keeping him with me. He's not going to be Batman again. This is all you. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, that's cool. She's being reassuring. She's like, you can be young. We can have the life that we deserve together, because we do deserve it.
Yeah, sort of he's worked very hard his whole life. So he deserves this break and this newfound youth to live again.
Yeah, and Bruce originally was not going to do it. But then something takes place where he gets a flat tire. When he pulls over to fix it, some thugs kind of attack him and attack this woman. because he starts beating them down. So they grab a woman, throw her out in the middle of traffic. Bruce runs out to grab her, but he physically just can't do it. And they're going to get hit by this truck until Batman shows up, you know, Terry, and saves them. And he's just like, you know, 20 years ago, I could have done this.
So it's another one of those.
Yeah.
Yes. Another one of those defining moments that makes him change his mind about his previous views on this Lazarus pit and gaining youth again. And so,
yeah.
And we also get to see in this episode that, and I don't know how long this had been going on, but that Terry's friend Max, who is the girl that Cree Summers plays with the pink hair, she knows that he is Batman, and she's kind of his, I guess, tech savvy partner in
it's
a
like
way.
His inside man or inside woman.
Yeah, kind of.
Him out.
Like, she's not a superhero in so many words, like that she dresses up and stuff, but she's kind of like Oracle in a sense that she's on the inside and does things for him that he couldn't otherwise do.
It's like on the last Batgirl run, Barbara had that friend that knew she was Batgirl that was on the computer all the time and just always feeding her info. It's pretty much exactly what this character is.
Yeah, true. So, yeah, she is that to him. I don't know how it happened because we didn't see that episode, but it's cool to see. Well, it's always great to hear Cree Summers' voice, and it's cool to see that he has somebody who is his age he can relate to more so than he can Bruce being the only person who knows the secret.
Right.
So that was neat. And then we get to see, you know, Bruce getting to the Lazarus Pit. And he is like, I'm thinking this whole time, like, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Something's going to stop it from happening.
He's
in the thing. And I'm like, all right, what's going to stop it? Something's going to stop it. And eventually he just gets dumped in the pit. And I'm like, oh, wow, they really did it. So, okay, let's see what happens. And he comes up and he's maybe, you know, in his 40s at this point. Like, she ages him, but not too much because she appreciates the gray in his hair. And he comments, he's like, you know, like your father. And so he, you know, she denies that. Yeah, foreshadowing, exactly. The way that it rounds it up a little bit is, first of all, Bruce and Terry are working out together in that gym and everything's fine. And then Bruce gets kind of has a change of heart. Also, this particular de-aging won't be permanent until a few more sessions of the Lazarus Pit. So he still has the ability to change his mind and reverse it altogether if he just waits long enough. And so,
yeah, it's basically explained like in a few weeks without treatment, he would, over the next few weeks, he would revert back to his normal age.
Right.
And this seems like it kind of gives him a side effect of he gets this really bad streak of anger. Cause when he first comes out of that, the pit, the first thing he does is tries to attack Terry.
Yeah, and that's typical of the Lazarus Pit anyway, but this is like almost like a muted version of that, because sometimes like when they come out of the Lazarus Pit, they're just bloodthirsty and ready to kill somebody. He was just about to punch Terry and he was stopped and then everything was fine.
And then at the gym, he gets mad and throws something and breaks a mirror. And he's just
like, you know, I didn't earn this, or I don't deserve to change this. And so he changes his mind. He's like, all right, like, we're done. We're leaving. And the bodyguard, this is where we see things really escalate, because the bodyguard's like, well, that's not, or the boss, I don't think the boss would allow that.
Mm-hmm.
And leaving is not in the boss's plans is what they say, because Bruce is thinking this is unnatural and he doesn't want to do it anymore, doesn't want part of it. And that's when we find out some craziness where, so they're getting away and Bruce goes by this door and he hears Race's voice and we're thinking, you know, like, oh, he's still alive. Like he's here too.
Yep.
And then he goes to the door and all he sees in there is Talia. And then it's like, oh, my God, no way. And sure enough, Ra's has taken over Talia's body, sacrificed her to continue living, because what had happened previously was he was beaten to the point where not even the Lazarus Pit could have revived him. So instead, he had to transfer his essence into Talia, sacrificing her completely to continue living on, which is what he's famous for, no matter what the cost.
And I could be wrong, but I think the way he said it made it sound like this was a result of something that Bruce had done to him.
Yeah.
Because like I think it was Batman had injured him so badly that he couldn't be fixed even by the Lazarus Pit anymore. So he basically killed his daughter so that he could live, which is horrible. Like that gave me like a sick feeling in my stomach thinking about this dad basically just killed his daughter and took over her body. Like, ugh.
Yeah.
It gave me a pit in my stomach.
It's very twisted, but it's just the lengths he would go to for eternal life is, yeah. I mean, this is the furthest I think I've seen him go, but that's just me too. Like, it made me feel, I didn't even think he would do something like that, but sure enough, like at least in this series, he did. And his ultimate goal, of course, wasn't to help Bruce out. It was to condition Bruce's body to back where it used to be when he was kind of at his prime, so that he then could take it over, you know, and
just
not
like
even
his daughters.
Right. Not even giving Bruce Talia's body or anything, but just kind of destroying Talia's body and getting rid of Bruce's essence altogether. So right. Just killing everyone off and taking over Bruce's body for his own. And that's like, oh, man, that's so smart, but so diabolical. And the way that they pulled it off, too, like he had me fooled up until like he told us who he was.
Right.
I was completely in it.
And as this all is going on, so Terry had been knocked out and the thugs were about to throw him into a lake with a bunch of crocodiles. But Terry woke up, beat them up, threw them in the lake himself, gets in there, gets in the Batman suit. And he shows up to basically save the day. It almost looks like Rachel's going to get away with it. Like, I knew he wouldn't, but the part where I thought it would be stopped, it didn't stop. And I was like, oh my God, like, this is going to happen. But then Terry gets him out of there and stuff starts catching on fire. And Rachel's like, oh no, no, we got to save the machine. And he saves the machine. And I'm like, oh, okay, I guess that's it. But then something falls down and hits the...
Yeah, one of the wires hits the Lazarus pit and sends
the
a spark.
Place explodes. Yeah, that entire place blows up. And I'm like, well, he's dead.
Yeah.
Good. Very, very good. And what was interesting is Terry's like, no, I can go back and look and try to save him if maybe he's still alive. And Bruce is like, whatever's in there died a long time ago.
Yeah, and that was a very cool like statement, because it's like that's great on two different in two different ways, because it shows that Terry has gotten to the point where he's really going, you know, practicing Batman's ideals, where he, even the enemies, he's willing to save their lives, even if they don't, you know, quote unquote, deserve it per se.
Right.
But also that there is a time when you just need to give up on this happening, which is where Bruce has reached the point where he's like this guy is beyond saving. Like he's basically lived enough lives as is, and what he used to be died long ago. So
yeah,
I like that.
Yeah, Bruce has moved Batman beyond sympathy for Ra's al Ghul.
Zing.
Yeah, that's the beyond part. I brought
there.
It
is.
Circle.
You found it out. It was that one scene.
And then it ends. I like how it ends, as Bruce is back in the Batcave and once again on the computer looking at photos, and he's looking at a photo of Talia and him together. And he says, you know, rest, my love, or something like that.
Farewell, beloved, because that's what she used to call him all the time, is beloved.
So I thought that was sweet, because I'm like, oh, man, Bruce really did love her. And like, if this was real, like, I have the feeling that he would have, you know, really taken her up on the offer, would have like lived out his years with her, you know? And I was like, oh man, that's kind of sad.
But Bruce just can't catch a break.
He can't, man. He can't. Sucks. Poor Bruce.
Well, Chris, looks like it's about time we pass on the mantle of Cartoon Boom to our inner kids, allowing them to venture forth on their own personal quest of remorse and vengeance, but not before they let us know what they thought of Batman Beyond.
Batman is the best superhero ever, but this Batman, I don't know. He's not nearly as cool as the real Batman. But since he's old and basically dead, this guy'll have to do. At least the stories are good, so I gave this cartoon 4.5 bowls of Shway cereal out of 5.
While I wasn't initially interested in this show, after watching today's episodes, I see now what a foolish fool I've been. I'm no better than one of those 2-bit Joker knockoffs. The new bat suit has really grown on me. The emotional core to these episodes is very strong, and it was interesting seeing what it would be like to have a teenage Batman, making this superhero somewhat more relatable to a younger audience. Overall, I'd give Batman Beyond 4.5 big bowls of Bat Hound Bites cereal out of 5, and absolutely recommend you give this cartoon a shot. Is it just me, or is Gotham City specifically the mom and dad murder capital of the world? Seriously, the survival rate of the parents of athletic, dark-haired young boys has got to be 0%.
You know, that's true, and that's why neither of us have kids.
Yeah. No. If we ever went to Gotham, we would just be killed off instantly so that our kids could be heroes.
If you want to survive Gotham, you can't have children.
Do not have children. If they are dark-haired children, put them up for adoption. Otherwise, just instantly.
And if they're blonde hair, they kill you. You got to go to the comics for that, but you'll understand.
Just
the Elliots. Look up the Elliots.
Just do not give birth in Gotham City. That's all we're asking.
Definitely not. Never
take our advice.
So do you have any final thoughts about Batman Beyond something? I don't know what it's beyond.
Batman Beyond.
Beyond sympathy.
Batman Beyond something. Batman Beyond Batman the Animated Series was. It was much better than I thought that it was when I was growing up. Like, at this age, I think I can appreciate it more because it had a lot of emotion to it that I don't think I really would have been able to connect to as a kid, or at least not understand as much as a kid. There was a lot of gravity to it that just wouldn't have made as much sense to me. And what's funny was it was created to relate more to a younger audience, which is unusual because it almost feels like it got to the point where it had just as much, if not, well, I wouldn't say more, but just as much a weight as the Batman animated series did as far as emotion goes. And I thought that, I mean, while I love that personally, and I did even when I was younger, I think it's funny that it was directed towards children and still turned into this show. And I think maybe that's just because Paul Dini was a large force behind it. And that's just kind of his personality when writing a show. But long story short, I appreciated Batman Beyond, and I think that it was definitely worth a rewatch. Even if you didn't appreciate it as a kid or when you were growing up or whatever, give it another shot, and I think you might look at it differently.
Yeah, like you said, I appreciate it more now as an adult, where I mentioned that I didn't care for it that much as a kid. And some of that has to do with not being able to relate as much when I was that age, even though it was, you know, geared towards me. But I guess that's what you get when you get someone like Paul Dini and Bruce Timm that typically use pretty adult concepts and stuff like that. It's probably hard for them to really, even if they're going for that kind of audience, I think those adult undertones always come through whether they're trying to or not. And I feel like that's exactly what happened with this show. My only concerns for this show were basically, like I said, is that some of the future stuff felt kind of cheesy. You know, some of that took me out of it. Some of the character development wasn't quite there for me, which is what kept me from giving it a 5. I felt like Dana was kind of flat at times. I felt the same for Terry. We do get to see glimpses of his personality, and we only saw 3 episodes. So, I mean, we're talking about a character that I'm sure we see his development over, you know, 3 seasons of this show. But in some of the episodes we watched, I felt like he was just kind of there, and we weren't getting necessarily his emotions on everything, aside from those small glimpses, like the very end of the last episode we talked about, where he wants to go back in and see if Ra's is still alive. But until that part of that episode, he just kind of was there and didn't really, I felt like he didn't have a whole lot of caring about what's going on either way, you know? So I can give that a pass because, like I said, this was only 3 episodes. But the writing, however, was great. The animation and the voice acting was top-notch, per usual, from these creators. So overall, it was super enjoyable, and I'm definitely interested in watching more of this. And I'd like to read some of the Batman Beyond comics as well, because I know they did comics of this. And I know for a while, one of the other Batman characters ended up going to the future and taking over as this Batman because Terry McGinnis died. And I think that would be interesting as well. I don't remember who it was, if it was Tim or who it was, but one of them did.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But so thanks, Will, for suggesting this. Obviously, we really liked it and were very surprised on a reviewing of it from when we were kids.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you.
One more thing before we close out, and I have to say this because I know big fans of the show will probably hate me if I don't, but if you didn't know, Terry McGinnis, if you watched the last episode of the second season of Justice League Unlimited, it actually is the official, you know, quote unquote, official last episode of Batman Beyond, because it kind of rounds things out and it shows you that Terry McGinnis is actually biologically the son of Bruce Wayne. Because Amanda Waller and I can't remember what group, Argus or something, they took a DNA sample from Bruce Wayne, injected it covertly into Terry McGinnis's father, where it essentially changed his biology to the point where any child that he spawned would be the equivalent of if Bruce Wayne had given birth to that child. Yeah. So, yeah. And that was kind of a, like, they knew that Batman wouldn't be around forever, so they needed someone to take over in his place. And so they needed a new Bruce Wayne, and this was the best way that they thought of doing it, almost to the point where the initial idea for them was, we're going to, after Terry is born and it becomes the same age that Bruce was when his parents died, they were going to assassinate Terry's parents in order to drive him to become the next Batman and follow his road of, you know, vengeance.
That would have been a lot of coincidences.
Yeah.
Because they have to, like we'll kill his parents, and then, you know, they're assuming that then he's going to go to Bruce Wayne and be Batman. Yeah.
That was their original plan. But then they had, I can't remember her name, Amanda Beaumont, I think, the person who was the Phantasm in Mask of the Phantasm. She was the one who was supposed to go and assassinate them, but she backed out of that. She didn't want to do it because she knew that that's not what Bruce would have done. And so they pulled that deal back, and luckily it worked in their favor anyway. And Terry was able to meet up with Bruce, and we saw the rest of how that went in the first episode. But this is the official closing of Batman Beyond, was that Terry McGinnis was the biological son of Bruce Wayne. So
that's crazy.
You're welcome. Yeah. I didn't want to add that at the beginning because I wanted to save that till the end just in case you had known about that. But
no, I had no idea. That's a very juicy marshmallow. Thank you. Yeah,
there you go. Everybody, you're welcome.
I can chew on that for a while.
So, yeah. Well, listeners, it looks like our milk supply has now run dry. So it's time for us to say goodbye. And next week, we'll be watching
Your Name, suggested via Facebook by Jason Madsack. Madsack. Sorry, Jason. That's just funny. Oh, God. How many times did you get made fun of growing up, dude?
Like, oh, man.
Feel free to tell us because I got to know. But he was the one that he suggested Life with Louie for us.
So this is going to be good because I loved Life with Louie. So I still refer back to that all the time. So
yes.
Awesome.
That, man, Life with Louie was a diamond in a sea of coals that I was expecting. So yeah, it was great.
Life with Louie changed my life.
Yeah. And Louie.
And Louie's.
It changed Louie. I don't know. what I'm saying. Let's end this episode. I don't know what's happening.
Beyond Life with Louie. Louis Beyond.
Louis Beyond. I would love to see that show. Louis Beyond.
Louis Beyond. Well, before we go on, once again, I'm Joseph.
And I'm Chris.
And we'll see you next Saturday.
Beyond next Saturday.
Yeah, we'll see you beyond Friday, which is Saturday.
Presented by NerdSloth,
a place for lazy nerds.
If you like what you heard, consider donating at patreon.com/nerdsloth so we can continue bringing you quality shows. Be sure to also leave us a review and share your favorite episodes and clips on social media. If you're looking for more content, visit us at nerdsloth.com.